This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we welcome you into Warriors Weekly, episode number one for the 2021-22 season. Very excited about this podcast for this season. John Dickinson joined this year by Matt Steinmetz. That's right, the old Warriors this week.
Old, come on now.
Together again, you and me both, brother. Both old, both getting up there a little bit, but great to be with you for this season. Every week we're going to do a pod, couple of podcasts, just talk about everything that's going on with the Warriors. And my goodness, a lot going on with the Warriors. Here we are 1 week into the season, and they are 4-0.
I mean, great start. And I don't think if you're a Warrior fan, you got much to complain about at all. I mean, everything's kind of falling into place. I realize it's only four games, but I was thinking this, JD, you know, these four games have kind of been a little bit of a template for how they would have to play and be if they were to max out and win, you know, more games than people think, 50 games, let's say. But that's the one thing that that's hit me the first four games is, you know, they're pretty deep. They've got all kinds of guys contributing, but also it looks like they're kind of ahead of everybody chemistry-wise and just knowing how they want to play to win. That may win them a lot of games early, too.
Yeah, it really could. And I think you just run through the first four, and whether it's Bielitsa in the opener or Otto Porter last night as we record this on Wednesday morning in the Oklahoma City game. Damian Lee's been terrific, really, in all four games this season, coming off the bench. And you just – I'll admit, I kind of wondered how it was going to look. Did they have enough talent? Was it real depth? But to this point, it's depth, but it's also connectivity between how they want to play and how these players fit in the system, which I think if you're Steve Kerr – you got to be thrilled that you've been able to get this group to come together the way they have, really, in not even a month of practices at this stage.
You said to this point, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. If you take those games individually, the Lakers just, they're just not, it's going to take them a while if it happens at all, in terms of like them getting a championship level. So that game, I could almost see the Warriors winning because they're just ahead of the Lakers in terms of chemistry and all that. That's like I'm saying how to play. Clippers, you know, they're up 20. They end up losing that lead. I'm not convinced the Clippers are going to be real good this year. I want to see the Clippers play more. Sacramento is Sacramento, Oklahoma City. My point is, and we may not get it for the next eight games, but my point is – we may have just seen, you know how you always talk in football about when do you catch a team?
Sure.
You know, we're just talking about the Colts. The Colts got beat by the Rams and the Cardinals, or no, Rams and the Seahawks early in the season, but the, you know, the 49ers got a better version of the Colts. So I got to see some teams. I got to see the Warriors, you know, against three or four good teams on this homestand, like the, you know, Memphis. To me, there's four good games: Memphis, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Chicago.
Yeah.
So
they'll be tested. But to that point, if you look at the first 12 games, you could make a case that, well, the toughest two games or two of maybe four would have been the first two, and the Warriors came out. I'm kind of with you on the Clippers. I mean, no Kawhi Leonard, that's a completely different team. They're trying to figure, like, I don't view them without Kawhi Leonard as a lock to be a top four seed in the Western Conference. To me, right, they're almost in that boat with where the Warriors would have been coming into it. Like, hey, yeah, they're maybe around the sixth seed trying to avoid the play-in tournament. If everything goes right, maybe they can make a jump up. But I think those first two games are really an indicator of the level by which the Warriors can take this thing to, because if it really is going to take the Lakers a couple of months to figure things out, and the Clippers are going to play without Kawhi maybe for the entire season, at least until the All-Star break or March before he's back in the fold. Well, those are two teams that you would have penciled in as ahead of the Warriors in the Western Conference. And here are the Warriors with wins in hand and just playing more effectively together than those two teams. So we're almost instantaneously, Steiny, in this mode of, well, why can't the Warriors be in the top four in the Western Conference? Because there's already a couple of teams that we would have thought would have been there that maybe aren't as good and aren't going to be as good, at least for a while.
Yeah, but I think sometimes, you know, I'm not saying the Warriors can't be that team, but sometimes I think we overlook teams where, like, for example, that's why I'm looking forward to this game against Memphis tomorrow night. Memphis is kind of like the Warriors in that when they threw their team out this year, it's pretty much the team they played with last year and did pretty well. Like, Memphis knows how to play together. You know, they know what their identity is, and Ja Morant's pretty good. So, you know, I know the Warriors are off to a good start. It all looks good, but, you know, do we know they're definitely better than the Memphis Grizzlies right now?
No, we don't.
We don't. And so, and I'm not saying tomorrow's game will decide it one way or another, but you get a picture. You know, you'll get a picture of it. If Memphis comes in here and wins, all of a sudden you're like, huh, you know, Memphis is pretty buttoned up. They just came in here and beat the Warriors. You know, if the Warriors handle Memphis, you know, Memphis is a team you got to – I'm not saying you can't blow them out, but Memphis is a team you got to – you got to kind of dot your I's and cross your T's, because they play hard and they know what they're doing. So, you know, Memphis is a team I got to look at, and the Warriors got to leapfrog them. You know, where, like, that I do see where you're coming from now, because, like, where are we with Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, they're struggling to start the year and trying to figure things out. And it would be natural for them getting all the way to the NBA Finals and having the 2-0 lead and then winding up losing four straight, it would be natural for them as a team now that didn't win it to maybe not put as much of a value on the regular season as they did a year ago. And that, to me, leaves a pathway for the Warriors to get up into that mix, or maybe even in a way, different personnel, different way the team is built, but maybe in a way the Warriors could be kind of like Phoenix last year, where they were a team that could they be, because a lot of people were talking about Phoenix as, oh, well, they're definitely a playoff team or a play-in team, but how good are they really? And then you looked up, you know, the early part of the season was like, well, wait a minute, they're the best team or the second best team in the Western Conference. And it was pretty obvious and steady for the entire season. So I think Phoenix and Utah both, and Utah's looked pretty good the first week, but Utah, the team that was the one seed and got knocked out, Phoenix, a team that was right there, went to the finals. Like, I think it's going to be hard for those two teams to maintain the level that they played at a year ago, which opens that door again for the Warriors. When you start, it's about trajectory for me. The Warriors' trajectory is up right now. I'm not saying Utah and Phoenix are down, maybe a tick, but if the Clippers and Lakers are down, some of these other teams, We don't know about Denver. All of a sudden, it becomes a lot more plausible that maybe the Warriors can get into that top half a little bit more easily than we would have thought.
Yeah, I think it's possible. And, you know, the only thing I don't like doing is you know, obviously rethinking everything after just four games. By the same token, I do think sometimes there's signs where you can just kind of see, you know, Lakers, they're not, you know, maybe it's, you know, it ain't going to come easy to the Lakers. And now you look at Phoenix and you're like, huh, in addition to all you said, I'm thinking that's a little funky with Ayton. I wonder what's going on altogether there.
Aren't they capped by
yeah, they just paid Bridges too.
Yeah, like they're the Chris Paul factor too. Like they're only going to be like, if you take Chris Paul away, how good, like they got a nice young core of players, but if you take Chris Paul away and he ain't going to be around forever,
right?
Their window closes immediately, and you kind of you don't know when that's going to come. Like Chris Paul, we talk about this with Steph Curry. I mean, Chris Paul's older than Steph Curry by a significant margin. Like at what point does he decline, or do injuries come back into the equation to where, you know, if he isn't himself, they can't win it. And you can just cross them right off the list, no matter how many good young players they have. And that opens the door.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a team. I still think Denver's pretty damn good. And if they, you know, Murray's going to get back at some point, you would think. So Murray is their Klay Thompson, if you will. So that, you know, that'll be obviously Dallas. You know, I'm looking at Dallas, and I know people think they might be missing something, and I'm not saying they're not, but I'm still looking at, you know, Doncic, Porzingis, and I know they haven't been great together, but Tim Hardaway Jr., they still got a nice three-man core, you know. I mean, Doncic is really good. So, you know, that's a team that could be – that's a team that might be better than the Warriors, Dallas. I'm not sure the Spurs are. I don't really know what to make of them. But, yeah, I think until further notice, I think the Warriors right now, the goal would be to get in that top half, especially knowing they have eight straight home games here. And in theory, you know, they go 6-2 and they're 10-2. You know what I mean?
Yep. They go 6-2, they're 10-2, and that's even, as you say, if there's four tough games of the eight, if you split those four and you win the other ones without some kind of a letdown, that gets you to the 6-2, and that gets you to the 10-2. And look, if this team's 10-2, the national conversation about them, I think, is going to shift. I mean, locally, we tend to be, I think, overall a little more optimistic about what the Warriors can be. Nationally, I feel like the narrative is, yeah, well, we'll see.
Right.
We'll see come March, come April, you know, where this team stacks up. But they're going to force themselves into the conversation, and I think rightfully so, if they're able to start off with that kind of a record.
Now, there is the other possibility that, you know, over the course of these eight games, you realize, huh, well, Memphis beat them, the Hawks beat them, Charlotte beat them. Then they let that one slip away. And now they're, you know, 4-4 looks like a disaster. So, and again, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, they play, for example, like when they play the Hawks now, the Hawks have the same team that they went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. So, they don't really need to make an adjustment, the Hawks, when they come in here and play. Like, that's – to me, that's a big deal early in the season. You know, even the Bulls, I know they're off to a great start, but they got all new personnel. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got a few hiccups along the line. But where are we – you know, one of the things that's interesting about this team is the depth we were talking about, and – you know how you could probably pick a half a dozen players off the bench who have already helped them win games. So if you look at the first four games, all their bench players essentially, maybe they haven't been positive for the consistent four games, but I think they've all been a net positive, whether it's Bielitsa, whether it's Porter, whether it's Iguodala, whether it's Damian Lee, Toscano Anderson, I'm going to throw in there, although he's been a little more just, you know, solid. But, you know, I keep coming back to Wiseman and Clay even a little bit. And it's not like that's a problem, but, you know, if Wiseman gets 15 minutes and Clay's getting 20 when he comes back, they're coming from somewhere. And as good as those two players are, at this point, somebody who's been playing pretty well, their minutes are coming away just to get Wiseman back. And we'll deal with Clay down the line, but, you know, that's the part that I think is we might be underestimating.
I think for Clay, it's probably going to wind up being some of Jordan Poole's minutes. And he's been up and down.
Yeah. You
know, he helped them in the Laker game. He really struggled with the Clippers and the physicality. He was pretty good against Sacramento. He's pretty bad against Oklahoma City. I mean,
yeah.
you could make the case the OKC game that he was a factor in why the Thunder were able to get off to the lead and maintain the lead for as long as they were able to up until late in the third quarter, when you knew the Warriors were going to make their run and probably take control as they did, and then figure out a way to make enough plays, make enough shots down the stretch to win that game. But it's been an up and down, I think, beginning for Jordan Poole. So I think when you plug Clay back in, you shift Poole more to that true sixth man role, his minutes probably go down a little bit. And then, you know, maybe Damian Lee's minutes go down a little bit. But you also have to factor in, you know, maybe Iguodala's going to need to rest a little bit more at that
point.
And so that's where having so many different players that can contribute, you always want to have a few guys, if you're Steve Kerr, that everybody's asking about, hey, why is this guy not playing more? Why is that guy not playing more? Like, that's a really good problem to have when you're winning. Like, it's a terrible problem when you're losing, because a lot of times people think, well, wait a minute, this guy, player X, player Y, can help. Reality is they can't help, and the head coach knows they probably can't help, and the team's not winning anyway. This is the reverse of that.
They also have players, for whatever reason, like, even though they're deep, it's not – like, hey, Damian Lee, you're coming in at the 6 minute mark. You're playing 9 minutes. You're coming out. That's your 18. Hey, Iguodala, you're doing this. I mean, he kind of is. But what I'm saying is, like, Payton, Bielitsa, Toscano Anderson, Otto Porter Jr., Damian Lee, they don't really know what their role is going to be night to night. They're pretty sure they're going to get in, but not a lot of minutes. So what I'm getting at is you also have kind of low maintenance role players. Like, they're not guys who, for example, last night Bielitsa played 7.5 minutes. You know, I don't think he's bitching and moaning right now.
Yeah,
because he's going to get his 6 minutes Thursday, and if he plays better, he'll probably play more.
Sure, and there aren't players off the bench that are entitled to a specific role
right, for
specific minutes. And I think they all understand that. It's kind of a plug and play bench,
right?
You go into a game with a framework of, all right, I think this guy's going to play in this situation, but it's easily flexible. You know, it's easily, you know, Otto Bielitsa wasn't a factor last night. Otto Porter was
a factor
in some similar ways to the way Bielitsa was against the Lakers. Otto Porter was against the Thunder. And I think that's where it's kind of on Steve Kerr and the coaching staff to know the personnel, know the opponent, know who's having a hot night, you know who needs a rest on a given night, and just mix and match and get everybody in the right spots within that framework. And I think they've done that pretty effectively when you look at, I mean, Iguodala has been tremendous in those first two games. He was pretty good last night. He's got to take the night off in Sacramento, and it opens the door for, all right, who's going to play? Well, Gary Payton II winds up playing. He hadn't played a lick to that point, and he goes in, and he's really good. He has 10 points. He's playing solid defense, like a couple of big threes. Like, they picked Gary Payton to be the guy to step in And he was a major factor in helping them win. Like they're it reminds me of the baseball team that is playing the right guys or going to the right,
like the Giants
at the right, a little bit of just you're playing the right guys on the right night. And how many times did we see that with the Warriors where, you know, last night made me think of all the years they were great. And I'm not comparing the talent level or anything like that. But one thing we used to always talk about, Steiny, is the Warriors knew the nights where they could, you know, not play well, kind of go through the motions, still make a run and be good enough to win. Well, they played their worst game of the four last night in Oklahoma City. I think pretty clear cut. They played their worst game of the four last night in Oklahoma City as we record this podcast on Wednesday. But you can still win when that's your worst. Like, you play that game against the Lakers, you play that game against the Clippers. Hell, you even play that game in Sacramento, you're probably walking out of that building with a loss.
Yeah, so let's see if they play it again and against whom. Like, if they play tomorrow against Memphis, they'll get beat. Oklahoma City's pretty
– yeah.
They're pretty rough.
That might be the worst team in the league.
I think they might be. They might be. But, hey, nevertheless, you know, they went – they're 4-0. They went in there. And, again, the other thing we were talking about is how you can tell Steve Kerr's like he's enjoying coaching these guys. Like he thinks they can be pretty good or have a chance to be. And like, I think he probably sees all the expectations and he knows that a lot of people are saying, yeah, it could be a 6 or 7. And I think he's thinking we could be better than that.
2 or 3. I think, I think he's seen it already. Like even if you want to give, it, to me, the Warriors have the potential. Any team that's not the best version of themselves, even the Lakers, any team that's not the best version of themselves this season, I think the Warriors feel like they can pass it, or beat out in terms of regular season seeding. And if Utah's not what Utah was last year, they don't care as much. The Warriors can be right there with them. If Phoenix is, you know, dips even a little bit, the Warriors can be right there with them. The Lakers, the same thing. I think there is. I think you're onto something there. A little bit of a quiet confidence with Steve Kerr, and we've seen it the opposite way the last 2 years. Like, I know you've shared this story. I mean, Steve Kerr knew that that team stunk 2 years ago, early before they were injured, and last year, how many times did it look like the personnel just didn't fit the style of basketball that he wants to coach? This team, with the ball movement, with the, I think, interchangeable pieces offensively and defensively, the connectivity, less headache, whatever it is, you can tell Steve Kerr, he feels like, all right, this is a team that's going to be a lot of fun to coach.
Right. What would you put, how many games does Steph have to play for them to win 50 games?
Probably in the low to mid 70s, probably pushing 75, 74, 75. I think he could miss 7. I give a little bit more leeway because at some point Klay Thompson's going to come back, and I think just having an extra scorer helps you, you know, not be 1-10 in 11 games without Steph Curry. Like I'd still be worried a little bit about that aspect of things right now, because
what
if Curry misses 10 games, do they go 1-9? Let's say they are 10-2. Let's say they're 10-2, and then look, nobody wants to think like this.
Right.
Let's say they are 10-2 and Steph misses the next 10. Well, they might be 11-11.
Right.
At that point, you know, at that point. And set themselves up to where now you got to, when Steph comes back, you're almost starting over. So I think, you know, this team is better equipped to handle that, I think, than last year, but I still don't think they're equipped to really make hay if Curry's not going to be on the floor. And he looks every bit as capable of being the type of player when healthy that he was a year ago.
I'm starting to think, starting to get closer to when Klay comes back. And the closer we get and like the more we see him, I worry that expectations might be a little too high for, let's say, his first 2 to 4 months back. Seriously.
Well,
like, I don't think he's, you know, he's not, unless I'm wrong, he's not going to be playing 35 minutes a night. So, you know, there's a chance that he's just might take him a little while to look like Clay.
I think you're right. But could you imagine if they're 22 and 10 when he comes back? I mean, the belief at that point is they can win a championship. I mean, if this team, and look, they're going to maybe 2 weeks from now at the end of this homestand, we're having a little different conversation about where this team is at, if it's, or if they sustain some kind of injury. But this team has the potential now to get off to a really good start record-wise, and that's going to lead right up into when Klay Thompson returns. And, I mean, the belief is if this team's, let's say, top 2 or 3 in the West without Klay Thompson,
right,
you know, that would give them the leeway that I think they're going to need to find out where Klay is and to ease him back in. Because I think you're right. He is, and he said it, and Steve Kerr said it. It's going to be a 20-25 minute a night thing initially. And, hell, I could see it not even necessarily being where he starts coming back necessarily.
Really?
Yeah, I could. I think now that probably would be off the table because Jordan Poole isn't exactly playing well. But I think if Jordan Poole was playing well, I could see them not hesitating to do that. But, you know, again, who starts doesn't really matter. The cohesiveness, you know, they probably start him.
I guess that's the other thing, too, is obviously when Clay's back, he's going to make him better. But it might take a minute before he makes him better. Like how
– yeah.
You know, and I know, like, for example, I know, you know, Wiggins – like, I get it. Wiggins isn't aggressive. So if Klay comes back and starts shooting, Wiggins isn't going to really like care. But, you know, how does Wiggins all of a sudden, it's like, damn, Wiggins is only averaging 11 a game, you know?
But that's probably okay.
I don't know. Not if Clay's not Klay.
Well, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay until Klay's not Klay, but you have to give some time to figure out if Klay is going to be Klay. And so if Wiggins takes a back seat in that interim, they may lose some games, but it would still be necessary, I think, to figure out where Klay is. Like, Wiggins is just going to live in this world where – as long as he can kind of just be there and do his thing and get his 12 to 15 points and they're winning, nobody's going to say,
right.
But you saw it last night. Again, we're recording this Warriors Weekly podcast, JD and Steiny. We're wrapping things up here. Our first episode, look at the Oklahoma City game, Steiny. First half, if you're on Twitter, and again, Twitter's not real life, but if you're on Twitter, right, everybody's crushing Wiggins, right? They're getting handled in the first half by the Thunder, who probably are the worst team in the league, and Wiggins is not attacking, and where is he? Okay. And he's, you know, he's missing shots. And like, he's the first guy that everybody goes to the moment that the Warriors
are
kind of an ugly half, and that was the case last night.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. And what's the deal, before we wrap it up, what's the deal? When do you think Wiseman will be ready to at least play? And
I mean, it feels like he's a couple of weeks away, probably.
Still.
Yeah, but they're able to be patient because let's put the rat on the table, and this is something we can maybe revisit next week. They're fine without him
right
now, and they're fine without Jonathan Kuminga right now, and they're fine without Moses Moody, except for a couple of 4 or 5 minute shifts in those first two games against the LA team. So, I mean, that might be the biggest takeaway. And this was where I kind of figured this team might be a little bit better than expected. It was just that they seemed, even in the preseason, so comfortable with their veteran players to where, and they're not even going to play the young guys all that much. And they're not going to have to.
Right.
So I think, you know, when you look at all of the depth and all of the veterans, I'm going to be the guy that's a little bit more patient, I think, this year with those young guys and not demand that they play or get shoehorned into roles that may help this team be less effective.
Oh, the better the Warriors play, or the more the Warriors win, the less the rookies are going to play, the young guys are going to play. There's just no doubt about it. So to me, if they're not playing, that probably means you're a 50-win team.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's a nice problem to have. All right. He's Matt Steinmetz. I'm John Dickinson. First one in the books, episode number one, our Warriors weekly podcast. We'll catch you next week for 95.7 The Game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.